Welcome and thank you for joining us for the last Lightning Talks today. I'm Seefischer. Zeltefiel is not here any longer, but she still did most of the organization. The Lightning Talks will also be streamed and recorded, so as a note for all speakers, you'll be live on television. For the audience, if you have questions, please step up to the microphones to ask them if there is any time. We have this nice clock here, which shows the 5 minutes which are allotted for each Lightning Talk. The first 3 minutes, it's green, then it turns yellow, and for the last 30 seconds, it turns red. And so you can see if there's still some time left. The speakers can also see this. Yeah, for the speakers, if it's your turn to speak, please come back behind the stage and just switch quickly with the next speaker. Please tell me to advance your slides. I have your slides here on the computer, and I can advance them for you. Yeah, and I think then we'll start. And we're going to start with Tom, who's going to be talking about repairing Apple chargers. Hello, Tom.
Yeah. Hi. Next slide, please, since we have only 5 minutes. So there is a well-known Apple charger problem that's going on for years, mostly with the older Apple chargers from the first generation. And there's actually a pretty simple formula for that one. It's just you take the lousy cable quality, which is the worst thing, plus a wrong tie-up, which is also suggested by Apple themselves. And you take those two, you add them up, and you do that times that some time, and then eventually it will look like you can see on the screen. So that is a well-known problem. So next slide. So and then there is also the charger solution problem. So how can you open a charger in a non-destructive way? As you can see on this picture, this is a picture from iFixit, and they use a screwdriver to pry it open. As you can imagine, afterwards it looks like crap. You should also know that a new charger costs about 70 euros, so it's quite expensive that you always need to buy a new charger. So next slide. You can see another way to open it, and over here this site suggested just take a pair of pliers, put it in between, and try to force break, but that's not easy because most humans don't have a third hand to hold the thing while you try to open it in this way. So there has to be another way. Next slide. So that's why I made up the Apple cracker, and it looks like this. And it's actually a small jig, and I have someone from our hackerspace, Quinton, and he will walk around so you can see it in detail. So it's actually a small device that you can use to open the device. So next slide, then I'll guide you quickly to the process. First, you cut off the wire. Yes. Next, then you put it in the cracker. As you can see on the picture, it has some cutouts on the back, and these cutouts they fit precisely into the edges, so that there's enough place for the falls. And then the next slide, please. Then you turn the bolts with a wrench, and this way. Next, please. You see that it slowly comes open, and then the first plastic clips they come off, and then next. Up, and then it comes more force open. Next. So then you can open it by hand. Next. Then you cut off this piece and you need to clean it out on the next slide. Next. And then you put the cable through. Next. And then this is the distance that you need. Next. Then you prepare the heat shrink, as you can see on picture one and picture two. Next. And then you clean up the circuit board by pulling out the rest of the wires while heating it with a soldering iron. Next, please. Then you resolder the wires on the circuit board. Next, please. It's almost done, you see. So now you put the little plastic thingy back, and you take a tie wrap and you put it behind to pull it on the cables as a sort of a force. Yeah, that's just a small protection. Next, you put it back together, and you can glue it back up with PVC glue, for example. Next, please. And then you add some clamps for a while so that the plastic can dry. And then in the next step, it will be finished. Hopla. So I believe this is the last slide. Yeah. So thank you. I have about 20 chargers up to now that I repaired the past year. So if you do have an Apple charger with you with the problem and you want to repair it for yourself, but you want to pry it open in a proper way, then just come by the hardware hacking area, which is also the Belgian Village. I'll be there from after these lightning talks, and I can help you open it. So, and then you can do the repair yourself. So, any questions?
Thank you. Next up is Vera Wild talking about the dark web.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Vera Caitlin Wild, and it's my privilege to be here with you today at Chaos Communication Camp 2015. Thank you for sharing these words and times with me. I'm here to propose two interventions to resolve the paradox of discretionary power in the age of mass surveillance. The paradox is that we know all sorts of reasons why centralized discretionary power can be dangerous. But we also know that decentralized information systems produce the most efficient aggregate outcomes. This is why markets work, it's why democracies work, and it's also why the internet needs to remain free. The two interventions have to do with rebranding the dark web and distributing art and information security kits around the world. The rebranding of the dark web that I want to propose is that we call it instead the Ether or Other Web, which is an acronym for Express, Dissent, Teach, Resist. These are the things that people are free to do on the artist formerly known as the dark web. By express, I mean things like people who have non-majority sexual orientations are able to express themselves there. They're also able to dissent, for example, in places like Iran, where being homosexual is punishable by death. They're able to teach, for example, Christianity in areas that are perhaps Islamic State controlled, where that would be, again, illegal and punishable by death, potentially. And they're also able to resist. So a lot of people know that internet activists use the internet, for example, as part of the Arab Spring, to fight brutally repressive regimes. What they may not know is that the governments then figured out that they could use the same tools to track down and kill those activists. And that's something that, for example, the Assad regime did in Syria. And it was very important for the same activists to then have alternate networks to go to have an other or Ether web space to work on, to continue working for freedom. So intervention one is that we just stop doing other people's PR for them by calling it the dark web and instead call it the other or Ether web. Intervention two is that we create what the fuck butterfly kits, or art and information security kits. What the fuck butterfly is a term referring to the way that the butterfly, or the symbol of chaos, which is modeled in formal game theoretical terms as a butterfly, a Lorenz system, is able to shape global security in the way that narrative shapes material conditions. So the same conditions with a different story can, in essence, narrative can turn a mistrust spiral into a trust spiral. So examples of what the fuck butterflies throughout history are people like Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr. or Rosa Parks, who through nonviolent resistance have used the power of story to change material realities in powerful ways. And we want to support proper information security by distributing tools like the CIJ handbook, Handbook for Information Security for Journalists, which is on the CIJ website. Distributing that and other information security tools like Tor and PGP encrypting on a USB drive, along with free books, for example, Library of Liberty, Shakespeare, the Bible, the Quran, just truth and beauty on a USB drive along with some tools for making art to support What the Fuck Butterflies around the world doing their work, helping make the world feel safe to flourish through art and information. If you want to get in touch and talk about these ideas, please contact me after the talk. My email address is wild as in Oscar and thinks as in thinking at gmail.com. Thanks.
Thanks. Next up is Nikto talking about decentralized package signing.
Thanks. So I would like to share a few thoughts about how the package signing works nowadays in Linux distributions or some other distributions, what's wrong and what can be improved. Slide, please. Okay, so nowadays you have typically some distribution, I don't know, Debian, CentOS, or something like that, or even Red Hat, or things like that. And you have some central server that's signing the packages. As a client, you have imported the key of the server, public key, and you can verify each package if the signature is valid. And yeah, you download the packages from some mirror, and yeah, for each package you verify the signature. This is okay. Let's go next. Yeah, the problem is that if you have a really strong attacker, like some intelligence agency or something like that, some, I don't know, NSA or Chinese or Russians or whatever you like, you can choose, then they may be able to somehow compromise the server signing the packages. Or it can be a technical way, you just hack it or have some special exploit that no one knows about or things like that. Or you can use a human factor. It's rare to have a people that have funds and time to do things voluntarily, so you can just insert your own people there. Or you can have a physical access somewhere, or you can use some legislation, like some countries have very bad legislation, you just came somewhere, tell them like, hey, give us your keys or you will go to jail, and you cannot tell anyone about this. So yeah, let's assume that there is an attacker strong enough to do these things. They typically also have access to certificate authorities, which are not really authorities, so they can do man the middle attacks on SSL or man at the site. Slide, please. Okay, so how the attack look like? Maybe slide, it's like that. Okay, so you have a client, you want to update your system. You click on update, you download the packages from some mirror or somewhere else. The attacker, as we know from the Snowden leaks at least, have some server near the backbone. So he can respond faster than the original server. They can break SSL in some ways. They have keys or so. Or even the SSL is not used. And if they have a key for signing the packages, they just send you fake package faster. Next slide, please. So what can we do to prevent this? One solution would be not to have a single server that's signing the packages, but to have a multiple server and use some multi-sign scheme, like, for example, in Bitcoin, it's used quite commonly. So you would need, I don't know, 5 from 7 servers or 2 from 3, or just pick your constants. And you can pick, you can put these servers all around the world. So you at least can prevent legislation attacks. Like you can force someone in US to give you the keys, but the same attacker won't be able to do that in, I don't know, Russia or China. And vice versa, the Chinese can force their server to give them a keys, but not the US guys. So the idea behind this is that we are not strong enough to fight a very motivated agency or something like that, but we can let them fight each other. So yeah, and they are built for exactly this, so they know how to prevent the others from getting the things. And so next slide, please. So yeah, instead of having one single server, you just go all around for signing each package. Next slide, please. Yeah, it would be slightly slower, but just minimally. Like when you compare it to shell things that are happening when you are updating system, it's completely nothing. It's a little bit complicated to implement, but once you do it, it should just work. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So if you have some questions or yeah, nothing.
Okay. No questions. Yeah. Thank you. Next up is Victor Nomad talking about Protocoder.
Well, yeah, prepared for this. So hello, everybody. I'm going to present a bit of a project I've been working for 2 years already. It's an open source framework for Android, but it's a bit different than the normal things. Next slide, please. So I guess many of you try to do things with Android. Basically, if you haven't done anything, basically the way of starting to do things with Android is like this. It's like, let's start with a normal tutorial. Next slide. So I cannot read the screen. So the first thing is like you have to download. Is Android Studio? Yeah, Android Studio. Next slide. Then you have to download Java. Next slide. Then you have to download the SDK. Next slide. I forgot. I'm a bit blind. Oh yeah. Then basically you have to grab the source code that they provide you in the tutorial. Next slide. And then you have to grab the XML for the layout. Next slide. And then basically you have to press play or compile. Next slide. And then you have to wait, next slide, and then you have to wait more, and at the end you get software. But, next slide, I think you went one further. Yeah, the previous? Yeah, so I think it's a bit old-fashioned, this way of working, and I think we can do things a bit better. Like, we are in 2015, so we can do things in a different way. Next slide. So I created Protocoder, next slide, which basically is like just an app that you install in your phone, and the app has absolutely everything you need. And then basically it has a kind of micro cloud. It has a bunch of servers that you can access through your web browser, and then you get a full web IDE that it doesn't go through internet or anything. It's like basically you store it in your phone, and you can write any code. Next slide. And I give you an example here, please. An example of how you write code in Android. So, with Protocoder. So it's basically JavaScript. It's really simplified everything. You don't have to, write this like really verbose code that usually you have in Java. And just to let you know how it works, I just added 2 more lines to that thing. And you can do. So it's basically, for me, this is the hello world of Android using Protocoder. It's like 4 lines of code and you have something like this. Next slide. This is how it looks, or it used to look, because now it's a bit different. But you have an app where you have all your projects, examples, and in the other side you have the web editor. Next slide. It comes with a lot of libraries already, so you can do like network operations, you have WebSockets, HTTP request, you have OSC, Open Sound Control, if you don't know it, MIDI support, you can plug an Arduino to your Android phone, and with 2 lines of code, you are starting to communicate with it, which is really awesome. You have Bluetooth 4 support, you have Pure Data, I don't know if you know Pure Data, but it's a really awesome sound engine. You have processing, it's a fork version of processing, which is this visual language. Next slide, please. Just to let you know, Protocoder is open source. It works with JavaScript, but it doesn't work in a web view. Basically, it's like it runs with Java, but it has a virtual interpreter, which is a Mozilla Rhino. It doesn't use cloud. I don't like clouds because basically you give your data to another people, and then I prefer to have this kind of micro cloud here with you. You can code with USB, with Wi-Fi. You can code from a computer or from the device itself. Next. And if you want to Checkitout, you have the website, you have the repository with all the source code. I'm looking for people who want to go with me in this adventure. And if you want to have a chat, you can contact me or have a chat after this. Thank you.
We still might have time for a question, if there is one. Any questions? No? Great. Dan, thank you very much. Next up is Becher talking about his Wild Village adventure.
Hi, my name is Vesna. This is my 9th large hackers camping conference since 97 in Holland. I only missed one of the German CCC camps. And one of the things that I like the most is the lakes or the forests that were around the camp. So then I thought, well, why don't I organize my next hackers conference myself? Next slide, please. So I'm here to invite you to my village in Croatia and to come and have an adventure there. Next slide, please. So it's going to happen next year. It's kind of strategically positioned between the CCC camp and the Dutch camp, which is going to be in 2017. And it's part of the larger story. My long-term goal is to create the intentional community of hackers and the people who like nature that would like to move away from the cities, but still keep this spirit of urban exploration and finding alternative solutions. And so this is going to be one of the small first steps to get there. So the village is in the mountains, it's in the middle of nowhere, and I want to spend 2 or 3 weeks there, so the plans are not really solidified yet. And what's going to happen there? Well, everything from just being there, to the unconference, to building a sauna, to any project that you introduce, or having the wireless mesh network. Next slide, please. This is how it looks like. So we've been there last year to see basically what is there, and it's really wonderful, although it actually needs quite some work. Next slide, please. So if you join, you can camp there for free, and there is actually a old farmhouse and the other one from the neighbor, and there are stables and kind of old workshops like actually very much like here on this place. So with a heavy wooden table with wrenches and like old fashioned tools and so on. And in one of the houses, there is actually a kitchen and a bathroom and there's electricity and all kinds of facilities, but not everybody can actually stay in that house. So we will have to camp. Next slide, please. So this is how it looked like when we were there. It was already a small family reunion gathering with like 15 toothbrushes together in the bathroom. Next slide, please. And so what can we do? Well, we can have an unconference where people teach each other things. We can collect wild food and the herbs, the healing herbs. I'm a bit of an amateur expert in that, and I can teach people about it. And then there are all kinds of self-sufficiency things that we can practice while we are there. And also enjoying nature by itself. So walking around, meditating, doing yoga. It's all depends on what kind of group of people goes there. Next slide, please. So this is an image of what can you expect. There is wonderful water there, mushrooms, strawberries. Next slide, please. And this is where it's located. So it is in Europe, but just barely. So can you, yeah. And these are other activities. So they're kind of close to the birthplace of Nikola Tesla, but the electrical installations there are a little bit old-fashioned by now. Next slide, please. And these are the contact details. And I will leave you with the last slide, if you just move on to the picture of cuddly squirrels, because that's the most motivational thing that that there is on the internet. And if you have any questions, there is still some time.
already up.
Slides are already out.
Thank you very much.
There's one more question, I think.
Okay. How big of an audience do you anticipate for this conference?
20, 30, 50 people.
Okay. Thank you.
Next up is a talk about the faces of hackers. Hi.
Hi. Oh, it gets cut a little bit. Hi all, my name is Matteo. Since 2005, I've been taking pictures of hackers all around the European events. You may have seen me in the last camps because I had this huge light with all the bulbs in it. Maybe I've taken a picture of you. I'm presenting a project that will be a Roman exposition. The name is Lombrosity. Next slide, please. Cesare Lombroso was a criminologist of the 18th century. He theorized that that could be something like a born criminal, pun intended, and you could spot out different type of criminals by imperfections and by biometrical traits. So you could have the eyes of the murderer, the ear of the thief, the nose of the swindler. I know that sounds crazy. It has been used in 18th century over and over to find out criminal and supposed criminals. Next slide, please. So in 1889, he published a book. The name was The Man of Genius, in which he theorized something that is even more weird. Genius was a type of insanity, and it could be passed to your children. And he did this very extended research on type of faces of geniuses from his time. So, next slide, please. I'm Matteo, and I've been shooting hackers with a camera, only with a camera, since 2005 to find out if there is some sort of common trait in the faces of hackers from all around the world. Fun fact is, aside from being generally awesome, and aside from a general diversity and beautiful diversity, there seems to be obviously no common traits. So every single time you depict a hacker in a certain way, with a certain hair, with a certain type of physiognomy, you're doing something like stereotypes, and that's all. Aside from being a little bit more males than female, in the year, but that is changing, fortunately, since 2005. Even the portraits that I've got in the different events are more female friendly than the first ones, and that is good. You have no common traits. Next slide, please. Oh, that's me. Another one, please. So, how extensive is the collection? Almost 8,000 pictures of 13 events. More than 8,000 kilometers traveled to take them. And I've got, well, right now it's the figure is close to 600 different faces. I think I've got the second largest collection in the world of portraits of hacker. The first one is supposedly in the NSA, but I can... I can trust it. Next slide, please. You see, there is some common trait in the faces of hackers. Look at the eyes. You're a very bad person, you know? No, the eyes. I'm not kidding. You can, as long as you will look at the photos, there's a website. Go in the website and look at them. You will find out incredibly curious eyes. The fact that characterize all the hackers that I've met into these 10 years is the extreme curiosity, and it reflects even on a portrait. I'm not a good photographer, but they are awesome people. Look at their eyes. Take another picture. Look at this guy. He didn't have sex with a Smurf. It's only colored bird. His name is Dante. He's one of the fellow in Hermes Center. I'm one of the founders myself. Go talk to him. He's a quite amazing guy. Next one. Some of us hackers are beautiful. Here is one example. My one is not so beautiful, so I use that one instead of me because it's far better than I can be. Okay, next one. All photos are released in Creative Commons. Next one. Some other people. Next one again. There will be a roaming exposition. I'm starting in Rome at the Maker Faire, and there will be another one in Expo 2015. Ask me to host it. I can send you a picture. You can choose the picture and present them at your location. I can even do pictures of you. Next one. The last one is come to get your portraits if you want. I will be at the Italian embassy with this huge ring light. And go to the websites, look at the fellow hackers, just be as you are. I like every kind of faces, and we are collectively awesome, and I think so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up is a talk about OWRL.
Can you hear me? No. Can I hide? No, it's okay? Okay. 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 My name is Olivier. I live in San Francisco, and I'm mainly hardware, so that's my first time at the camp. First, I want to say that I'm amazed by the camp and the people I've been meeting. I think it's a lot of energy, and it's really great to be here. So today, I'm here to show you a project. So we are doing hardware. We are doing hardware for customer, and every year, we are trying to do a project that we think is very important. As a hardware person, we wanted to participate to the privacy issue. So we wanted to do a computer which could bring more safety for people to develop software on top of it. Okay. So if you go to the next slide. So we designed this computer, which has two key. And basically, you cannot use a computer unless you have a key with you. This is the prototype of the computer, and I can show you that after. So to use the device, you are using a key. If you are next to it, so it will not start until the key is presented. If you are next to it in 10 meters, you can work with it. If you are 10 meters away, you log out, and you have a lock screen, and you cannot access it. If when you are logged out, somebody moves the device or walk away, we wipe all the we shut down. If somebody try to open it, make a hole, or disassemble, or do some side channel selection, or whatever, we will erase all the keys, including the SSD keys and all the credential keys. Next slide. So this is a real computer. There is inside x86 platform, Skylake. There is an access point, 802.11, and there is also a secure microcontroller. We have USB output for keyboard and accessories, and we also have an HDMI out to put a screen. Next slide. This is what is inside. So this is really an x86 platform, and I can show you that after, which is fully secure under a shell with a dynamic mesh, and I can also explain the details later. So the device will erase all the SSD, SSD keys and any credential keys if it's tampered or frozen or trying to be opened. Next slide. This is how it's made inside, and I can show that to you. So it's really an x86 platform with 2, 4, 8 gig. And there is on the back an SSD slot where you can put up to 512 gig of SSD slot. The key is encrypted with NFC on Bluetooth, and I can also explain how this is done. Next slide. That's the basic architecture. So I just want to highlight this is three component. There is an access point, there is a secure controller, and there is a full computer. And the goal is really to be able to make sure that you can trust a computer. We designed that mainly for ONG, journalists. We want to bring any kind of hardware security to people to put any kind of software they want on top of it. So our goal is to do that open source on open hardware and let people do whatever they want. And I've been talking with a lot of people with different ideas, and I'm looking forward to hear more from everyone. So we are trying to find some key project to support. We will open all the different technical documentation to enable people to do development on this. So if you have any good idea or something that you want to develop, please come see me, and I can give you more details. Next slide. That's where you can contact me. And we've put some basic specification on the website. We are currently in prototype phase, so we don't have that many units, and we are trying to go to the next stage to try to focus our activity on this and try to participate to any privacy improvement. We think we can help in the hardware. I cannot do much in software at all, but in hardware I think we've done an interesting job here. So that's it. So I will be here, and I'm also at the French Embassy if you have any questions.
Yeah, there's a question.
Hi, thank you for your presentation. Did you get in contact with another project that is working on open design hardware called CryptTech?
No, I'm interested to know.
It's cryptech.is.
Okay.
We can talk later.
Thank you. That would be great. I'm very new to the community, so I've tried to meet a lot of people and try to understand, but please, I would love to learn more on other projects. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next up is someone who we've already seen yesterday. That is Steve899 talking about peak level performance.
Thank you very, very much. My name is Michael, and yesterday I was on this stage actually. And after this talk, I have another slot, so bear with me a few more moments. This is my nature. I love to be in the spotlight, and the CCC is for me a great learning experience. I learn a lot, and I just realized that mind is a very plastic matter. And just as we send space shuttles to outer space, we are able to observe galaxies million light years behind. However, we haven't built a microscope into our brain. We know relatively little about how our brain works on the intermolecular level. We know about, say, dopamine, some neurotransmitters, but there has been a very, well, not to my knowledge, there is no microscope into the brain. And I know that certain, can you go to the next slide, please? Basically, human brain is very plastic. We have enormous capability to improve our performance. And as I was experiencing this camp, I realized that I should improve the quality of my breathing, that my lungs should absorb more oxygen. I should improve the quality of my running. If I run quickly, I can able to do more stuff. And also learning, absorbing the knowledge and communication protocols, because we are from different cultures, from different backgrounds. We come from different places. And this is the place, if we learn how to communicate between each other, this will can be a major shift. For instance, next slide. For instance, we don't talk about sex, drugs, and money at school. I wish my children were taught how to talk about sex, drugs, and money. This is nothing evil. This is part of everyone's lifestyle. Well, basically, we need to improve our communication. And the project I was talking yesterday, the Genesis RE, it it is a long-term mission, and I would like to look after my body and achieve 150 years of lifespan. I'm pretty sure it is possible. Just looking at the technology progression in the past decade, like the first iPhone was released like 10 years ago, and we put man to the moon in 60s. So basically, with the medical progress, I'm pretty sure that 150 is a very conservative estimate. By the time I'm 60, that it could probably expand to 200. But you know, this is just a wild guess. And just like the another mission of Genesis, this is a very, very long-term vision, is the survival of the human species, because we as a planet Earth, we are a little bit in danger because of the global warming, because of the what happens if the meteorite hits us. Basically, if we as a humanity want to survive longer term, and I mean longer terms on a cosmic scale, such as billion of years, not like last 200,000, we need to spread out. And one of the reasons of the Genesis is actually to put systems in place that will allow us to live after we spread out. I know this sounds completely crazy. I know that I look like nuts to you. I'm very well aware of that. However, I am able to connect the energy from the cosmos and at the same time stay grounded. And if this is not a place, there is no other place on Earth I could freely speak what I really think. Next slide. I'm actually not asking for anything. I have all the resources I have. I am actually speaking with my mother, who is supporting me. And basically, it's about the journey. Once upon a time, I achieved a goal. And after achieving this goal, I became depressed because there was nothing else to go. This time, my mission is the survival of the human species. And even if I'm, say, 80% completed, it is still a fairly good goal, and there will be perpetuating. Visit the website genesis.re. Genesis as in source, origin, beginning, .re as in restart, renew. Press the reset button and start something new. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Next up is a yoga presentation also being held by Michael, was it, right?
Michael.
Okay.
Please get your microphone as close as possible. Stick your thumb up this way. Mm-hmm. That's the right distance.
All right. I do some yoga, and within next 5 minutes, I would like to show you and teach you a very basic sequence. It's called the sun salutation. And whenever you go to a yoga studio, this is the opening sequence, because this is just a warm-up. And regardless your physical level, you can do this. And I actually encourage you to find some spot and practice with me. If you feel adventurous, if you want to try something new, there is plenty of space in the hallway, plenty of space in the corridor. I encourage you to follow me. Right now I'll just put microphone aside just for a few brief moments, and I will demonstrate it to you, and you will see that there is nothing really exceptional. Anyone can do this. As you see, it wasn't anything that special. This is a very basic sequence. And regardless the place where you go, whether it is... Because there are so many different types of yoga, and one may just contemplate which one is the right for me. In reality, it doesn't really matter. It is about the journey. It is about the progress. I started doing yoga because I had some back problems. And as I see people at the camp, it's like most of us sit in front of a computer for an extended amount of hours. And in my personal situation, it's helping me. I become more efficient. I can work more efficiently. And basically, I highly recommend you to try out. And probably you've already seen me enough. Can I actually finish earlier? Is there anyone next in line?
Maybe any questions from the audience about any of the two talks? Doesn't look like.
Thank you very much.
Then thank you very much. And next up is Al Guldor, if he's here today. He wasn't here yesterday, unfortunately. Al Guldor, are you here to talk about the food hack and base? That would be great. Looks like we also don't get to see this presentation today. I could play PowerPoint karaoke with the slides, but I'm going to spare you. Then maybe Manuel Klarmann is here. Yes, great. He's going to talk about something with climate change.
Something with climate change.
Yeah, but okay.
So hi, my name is Manuel Klarmann. Next one. Next slide. Next slide. So did you know that 30% of our greenhouse gas emissions originate from our food consumption? This is really massive. Everyone can cook, but do you really know how much CO2 is actually in single ingredients? I got intrigued by the question, how can we break down these complex matters of climate change into simple little steps that everyone can follow?
Please put your microphone close together.
No,
you can hold it in your hand. It's okay.
Fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. how we can break such a complex problem into little steps that everyone can follow. That's probably also why I fall in love with computers. When I was really of small age, I fell in love with the idea of creating actually artificial intelligence. And there was actually a vote in my school, who is going to be the person who will not get along with reality, and I got first place. I scored 70% of all votes. And you gotta guess, they were right. I not get along with reality. When I was a small child, I had really the pleasure of a great childhood. We had nothing to worry about. I had enough food, I had enough safety, I could experience and learn everything from the world as it came along. I don't know how many people in the world have the chance. So sometimes when I think back at my childhood, I get struck by the belief that we're actually one huge big family and responsible for each other. And right now, bound by the constraints of nature, here we strive to actually make the decisions for the future generations to come. So there's this thing, when you look at CO2 emissions and food, there's actually the potential to reduce those emissions by 50%. And it's not just about CO2 emissions, it's also equally important about resources like water, oil, land, and so on. And they equally scale down if we reduce CO2 emissions. Just to dig in, there's a method, it's called life cycle assessment, where we can look at the specifics, what goes into the processes of food production, what goes out, and from there on, we can see what actually matters in terms of CO2 balance. So I brought an example. So there's a tomato. When we have it local and it's seasonal, then it's really cool. When we bring it from abroad, I don't know what it says, if it says Spain or something, it's a little bit more, but when we grow it in a greenhouse, it's much more, this tomato, which becomes more interesting when we look at asparagus, which is also fine if we have local and seasonal, or if we actually bring it in with a ship, which is really low in emissions, but it makes a huge difference if we bring it in by airplane. There you see a huge peak, what actually that difference makes because of the airplane. But most importantly, when you look at animal proteins, you see there are a lot of emissions. This is basically from the methane emissions the cow emits, and that we use also to produce milk. In the middle, there's the cheese. And of course, we grow a lot of feed to actually feed these cows. And that sums up that the really big decisions that we should make is actually start loving to eat more plants in order to do something. So this is also... So this is the easy take-home message, that first, start eating more plants. Second and third, more seasonal and local to avoid greenhouses and airplanes. But what we thought is that we need to go a step further. So we thought about bringing all this data and making climate-friendly meals, really having the convenience that you can go into a restaurant. Oh, I'm fucking out of time. That you can go into a restaurant and actually have a climate-friendly meal at your convenience. So we started a movement. We called ourselves Eternity. We wanted to start a movement to establish climate-friendly meals in society. And so there's the scientific method. This is a carrot. It has 33 grams of CO2. The specialty about it is that we actually collected, we started collecting a few years ago, every scientific publication that actually measures the footprint of different ingredients. We went to the university with this and showed it everything, got proof. Actually, right now, we're working together with scientists. So we have the ability to do these calculations really precise for every meal that basically gets served. There was still, this is our database. So there was still a challenge that we needed to convince our university to do actually something about it. So we got a team of people together to inform the public. So we finally could make climate-friendly meals in our restaurant. And it was, I mean, it was a lot of work, but it was also a great success. The university at first forbid us to actually communicate anything to the public at that moment. But when we served the meals, the media came in from themselves. Because they were interested in what we're doing. And out of 4,000 meals that were served, 2,000 of those were eaten climate-friendly and chosen by the students climate-friendly. There was a tipping point, because as we did this, Kofi Annan came to visit our university to talk about climate change and how scientists can do something about this and put it into application. And we got the pleasure to actually meet him and tell him about our project. And he basically gave us a pat on our back and said, hey, this is not just something for our university, this is something really for humanity, and we should go out and tell everybody about it. So we took our guts together and we programmed the software that makes it possible that everyone can go on the software and put in recipes and actually see how much CO2 they have. And the third thing that we did is that we started going towards restaurants and convincing them to use our software to serve climate-friendly meals. And right now in Switzerland, we have about 100 restaurants that actually do serve climate-friendly meals. So I'm a little bit over time, sorry. just to go a step back, it's really easy to cook climate-friendly meals. My grandmother can do it, you can do it. It really connects us to the people that we love. And so my message to you, if we are able to eat climate-friendly climate-friendly three times a week, we could save 1 billion tons of CO2 a year on this world, and there's nothing like that effective. There's no technical miracle, there's nothing that we can do to actually challenge climate change so effective. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Remy. Is he there? Yes, he is there. Great.
So, hello. I'm Remy from The Faced. I'm going to tell you something about our organization, on our non-democratic organization, and we're spread around a lot of countries. So, I can speak and Swedish and German and Dutch and English at the same time, so I choose to do it in Dutch. And maybe I throw a little Dutch and Dutch in it. The Feest organisatie is eigenlijk een redelijke dictatuur. We spreken geen dingen af. En dat is denk ik waarom de organisatie zo goed werkt. Mensen zeggen wat. Iemand kan lid gemaakt worden van de organisatie.
Je kan niet lid worden, je kan niet vragen. Je wordt lid gemaakt en je hoort erbij. Dan ben je een member en een crewlid. Een crewlid die mag dus dingen beslissen. Het is alleen niet per definitie dat het uitgevoerd wordt, want dan heb je medewerking nodig van andere mensen. Sorry. Subtitled. Oh, I don't know if it's possible here. Can somebody subtitle it?
Well, I'm not sure whether we have anyone who
you
speaks
may
Dutch
it.
In the translation chamber. No, we don't.
Oh.
I'm very sorry.
The people right. in the front.
Then I choose someone from the public. You in the fourth lane, second spot. You may subtitle it. That's how the organization works. We zijn redelijk. Is Nederland. We hebben een aantal policies binnen de organisatie. Een van de dingen is: we hebben een website, we hebben SIP, we hebben IRC. Al die dingen die worden deels zelf gemaakt, deels open source gebruikt. Alles wat zelf gemaakt is, er mag niet geprogrammeerd worden. Geen regelcode geschreven worden zonder dat je dronken bent. Er wordt alleen gekookt als er afgewassen is en ik was niet af. Nou ja, een beetje dat, hoe de organisatie in elkaar zit. En volgens mij is de club ontzettend bekend onder de events. We worden altijd uitgekozen als jullie doen dat, jullie doen dat. Dat is onze manier van doen, dus we zijn daar blij mee. Ik denk dat dat wel het belangrijkste was van onze organization. English word.
Please do it in English again.
Our questions.
There's a question.
Yeah. What? What?
What?
What?
I told what? Something about our organization.
Ah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Other questions?
There's another question over there.
It may be the same.
Que fait ton organisation, en fait? Elle s'occupe de quoi?
Daar zijn wij het wel mee eens, ja.
Hello.
We do agree with that.
And I think we have time for another question over there.
Kan je mij lid maken?
Wat zei je?
Of je me lid kan maken. Klinkt goed bij jullie.
Het is hartstikke leuk bij ons, maar misschien komen we een keer bij je langs.
Nou ja. Dank je.
Sinterkerst. Waar woon je? Want wij organiseren vaak feestjes bij andere mensen thuis.
I have a public service announcement from the translation booth. They need help.
Oh. Ja, ik kan wel helpen. Is geen probleem. Ja, kun je een keer naar Maastricht komen met jullie de feest? Kraakpantaar en kan het aanraden.
De Lamba Blanc door.
Ja, dat is mogelijk.
Top, doe me.
Okay, there is a rule to the lightning talks. You normally have 5 minutes, but you can ask for 2 extension minutes.
Yeah, well, the digital translator just came in, so you can listen to the 2 translated minutes on the... No, okay. It's not the digital translator. I must have confused him. Well, when you're finished...
Yeah, I'm finished.
Okay, then thanks very much. That was very informational. Okay, the last lightning talk for today will need a little technical setup, which I hope we can get done as fast as possible. I'm gonna do the video and you maybe do the network stuff with the switch over there. No need for networks, okay, but need for this computer. Okay, I'll just...
Yeah, that's one basic problem of the lightning Please continue. That's one basic problem of the lighting talks. You can't, normally cannot switch devices and gadgets. That's why we keep it to the end of the talk. So this is the last talk. And so it might be possible. So please be patient for a minute. We are trying to mess up things as fast as we can. And don't use the effort here.
So now there might be video. Oh, there's a graphical interface to X-Rande?
Yeah.
I never knew.
Yeah, and a message from the video operation team. If you do such stuff, they really like it if you know your X-Rande.
Oh, yeah, it is. Okay. So, be right back.
Sorry about the wait. I'm going to talk about my hat. I want to talk about this, which is called Internet Cube, and it is like a great thing.
Yes,
that's better. My first concern was. I didn't really trust my...
If you use a handheld microphone,
Please
put your thumb up.
Yeah.
Put your thumb up.
Like this?
Yeah.
And put it right here.
Oh, yeah, I'm a true MC.
Now you have the right distance. You can move everywhere.
Okay. Noise. My first concern was I don't trust my ISP, and he knows everything I'm doing on the internet when I'm connecting to it, so... This cube solves a bit of that problem because by plugging it to my ISP router, I was able to encrypt actually all the connections that were made. So it hides what I'm doing on my internet connection from my commercial ISP. That's the first part, which is already quite awesome. The second one is what I really wanted to show is that. And there is, on my hat, the same thing. There is a server running on that thing. And you can plug it anywhere, and it gives you access to your data, to your website, and to, pretty much what you want on the domain name you choose. So I'm going to connect to it on a very exciting domain name, I guess. That's me, because I'm very expert. I hope it will work. So I'm not receiving well. Because the server is actually on my hat, so very expert is my hat, and obviously it doesn't work. That ruins everything. I'll be right back.
You have 2.5 minutes left. That's enough time to fix it.
Okay. The thing is, I did not have internet connection yet. You told me before, but I forgot. So my hat is broadcasting a Wi-Fi network, which it's called Be Excellent to this hotspot, and by connecting to it with a really strong password, I guess. Very, very expert in network, right? We are not Freifunk. What the fuck? Freifunk, get off. No. Okay. But Freifunk. Damn it. Well, they're friends, but, you know, they're broadcasting everywhere. Yes, it works. Now. So I'm connected to my hat, but I'm just connected to a random access point here at this point. Is it plugged? Like.
Yes, the network is active.
Ah. So I am active.
So it's a 404 head not found?
Looks like it, but it looks like a hat timeout so far. It's not good. Wanted to amaze you, but obviously doesn't work. Let's ping Google, which is always a good thing, right? Okay. And it's gone. Okay, so let's connect to a true network. Nice. What the fuck? Well, I'm sorry, obviously. I'm the last. Oh, yeah, great. So.
You can ask for an extension.
Yeah, oh, I will.
It's a live demo, I know it's hard. But you do not do this because it's easy.
No, it should be.
We're at the last lightning talk, so we can bear with you a few minutes longer.
Yeah. Oh, my hardware. Friend is coming. Oh, so I will talk to you about the second part, even though I cannot access to it. My hat is containing all my data, which in a way is a good thing that it doesn't open to the internet, right? So I have my emails on it. I have a very cool very.expert website, which is it should be accessible at some point, and I can receive emails in whatever at very.expert, so that was the second part. Now, you may wonder how we did a true plug and play server that you can bring home and just plug and you have your data on it, and. When my friend is fixing the network, I can talk to you about that a bit more. So, the Internet Cube is a bundle of three things: a hardware part, which is like a small Raspberry Pi on a box with a Wi-Fi antenna; a software part, which is basically Debian with free softwares installed in it to handle internet services. Like your emails, and your files, and serving all that to the internet, and a network part, which is handled by local non-profit ISPs, which I'm part of, and which the Federation FDN is about. thank you. Although you probably don't know what FFDN is, but we have a stand over there, we can explain. The thing is, we are non-profit ISPs, and we are providing neutral internet accesses. And the thing about local is that you can probably trust more your local ISP, with whom you can bring beers and hang out than your commercial one. And that's about it. But you wanted to say something, maybe.
Your 5 minutes are up.
Yeah, I'm 5 minutes. Well, I tried the demo because Very Expert was a great site that I may admit.
But you will have a chance at the Congress, definitely. Nah. We will reserve a slot for you.
Oh, that's kind. Thank you. You will want to try it? Oh, it works. Oh, yeah, it works.
Do you want to see it? Okay.
Come on, internet. Come on.
This is the longest lightning talk of this camp.
So, I'm so sorry.
Very expert.
Should have prepared a GIF at some point to dance for me. Maybe you can try very.expert on your... Okay. 30 seconds? Yeah, 10 seconds. All right.
Okay, I actually give you 2 more minutes.
Oh, that's so
okay.
Kind. Okay. Did you try?
Didn't work.
Did it work?
No, sorry. I do, on the other hand, have your slides in case you want to show them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we can definitely show the slides in the meantime.
Do you have them on there, or shall I connect them?
There's basically contact information, but not much about how it works. But yeah, please do. Oh, you want to? Okay. And it's gone. What? Is that?
So you have 55 seconds left. There are your slides.
Oh, yeah. I didn't watch it. So the slides. You can go right to the end, I guess, because this is the website where you can consult information about what the box is, and obviously you can just ask questions at the end of the talk or at the FFDN stand, which is just a street over there. And I guess there is one more, no? Oh, no, that's the last one. And there is a mailing list, I would say. IRC channel in which you can connect. What's about the network? We have like 10 seconds. Not working. Well,
so,
just try to
much.
Go to very.expert. At some point, it should work. When we go back to the camp, so thank you anyway.
Thank you very much. And with this, we conclude today's lightning talks, and also the lightning talks for this camp. Thank you very much for attending. And if you want to give a lightning talk at the Congress, please do so. Please tell us about your project or what you're doing in politics or any other thing that you want to have your 5 minutes of fame about at the Chaos Communication Congress in Hamburg. Thank you.
Yes, those were the lightning talks for this camp. So I hope we all will see you again at the Congress. And it was a pleasure to work with those guys who prepared the lightning talks, who did all the organizing, who did all the announcing, and also all the people behind the scenes on the video, on the microphone angels, the people in the translation box. So I think it is more than appropriate to give them a big round of applause for this marvelous work.